Welcome to the Make Room Show, formerly titled The 29-Minute Mom. I am your host, Jennifer Ford Berry, certified professional organizer, best-selling author, and coach. I've spent the last two decades teaching women how to get organized so that they can free up more space, time, energy, and money. This podcast is for the woman who wants to make room in her home and in her life for the people and the things that matter the most. Each week, I am bringing you episodes that will help you feel less overwhelmed and more inspired to create the life that you deserve. So come on, girl, let's do this together. Hey, everyone out there. We're so happy that we are back after a couple weeks off with the Make Room podcast. And so I am super excited to get back to work and to also introduce my guest today, who actually, this interview is like perfect timing for my own life. And we've been trying to get this interview done for a couple of weeks, but as a working mom, some things don't always fall into place the way we think they should. So welcome my guest today, Jenna Worthen.
Hey, Jennifer, so glad to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. And I know this is going to be an awesome conversation for any moms that are listening that are working and mothering at the same time. So I want to give a shout out to you for publishing this book, Mom Who Works. Congratulations.
Thank you.
To redefine what it means to be a working mom in a world without working dads. Isn't that the funniest thing ever? I love it. Really, really awesome. And I love the humor in it. And I love your, just your outlook. So I'm excited to share you with our audience and share this book with my audience.
Thank you so much for having me on today. I'm so glad we could finally connect. No one calls my husband a working dad. It's the most remarkable thing, but here we are, working moms and all that that brings to us.
So let's just start off by that. I mean, I just think that is an interesting statement in itself. I've never thought about it, but yeah, nobody's calling my husband a working dad ever. So let's talk about that first.
Yeah. And this is not to be like a diss. I have a great husband. I'm lucky in that regard. And he's a very involved parent. But no one calls him a working dad, and this phrase, this label that so many of us have worn as a badge of honor, this idea of being a working mom. We also know that that comes with internal, and external expectations, right? So things that the world is putting on us, we know that there's lesser pay and workplace bias and limited career mobility and all of those kinds of external facts and figures that we have, right? But then there's also some of these internal things that we choose to take on: guilt, shame, comparison, some of those things. And so, also I don't love the ordering of the words, to be frank with you. It implies that work, two things. One, that work comes before being a mom, which don't get me wrong, we all have seasons when it certainly feels that way, right? Because work is more demanding and that's fine. But I know that being a mother is something I now take with me everywhere, right? So I'm not leaving that behind. The work does not necessarily come first. And then it also implies that the work comes before the mom herself, right? And her goals and her dreams and her aspirations. And so kind of on a run one day, I felt like it was just some divine inspiration. I was not done working, but I was done with this working mom crap. And just kind of this idea of a mom who works, just like my husband or your partner or whoever is a dad who works, it's so funny too, because, when I'm late for a meeting and I smell like spit up, it's a little bit like, you need to get your shit together, and if my husband's late because he was dropping the kids off at school, it's like a pat on the rear end, like, way to go, man. You're so dialed in, it's just such a different experience, I think. And so it's just a tongue-in-cheek way to hopefully grab your attention too and ask some questions of, hey, what are we putting on moms that we're not putting on dads?
I love it. It's so funny. I feel like moms too, because I work with so many moms inside their homes, and I feel like we're like the overall manager of our entire life. Mm-hmm. Like our brains are not only thinking about work, but they're thinking about managing this family and managing this house. And I feel like dads, a lot of times, don't have to manage as much. I know for example, in my house, it's like he comes home from work he's not an entrepreneur, so he leave work at work. And then also I'm the one saying, oh, we got to do this. We got to do that. We got to make sure we call this. We got to do all these things for the kids, for us, for the house, for planning vacations, for finances, everything. So it's like we have two major professions and careers, right? It's like the same way you constantly are going through your to-do list and prioritizing at work, you're doing that with your family.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, a friend of mine told me this, and I need to figure out where she got it because I want to attribute the source to it. But it's this idea too, that moms are the ones, we're the forward makers in the family. Like without us, nothing moves forward, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The vacation doesn't get planned. The dinner doesn't get set out, whatever. I know everybody has their own arrangements where you may have some more, we jokingly call it man's work and women's work at our house, but you know, like it also diffuses tense situations, whatever. I'm like, hey, don't forget that is man's work and you need to get it done. And also in our house, man's work is dinner too. So it's not, you know, it's not completely traditional, but we're the forward makers, you know, and you bring up an interesting thing too, is I also am an entrepreneur. And so my work does stay with me 24/7. You know, this year I was brave and didn't take a laptop on my vacation for the first time in 15 years. And that, to be honest with you, I'm not sure. I still don't know how I felt about it, right?
Kind of scary, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, like we also take that mother part of us everywhere. And I think if we want to live wholeheartedly, we have to say the intersection of motherhood and careerhood is a good place. And I can take that mother with me. One thing I try to talk to moms about too is you brought up such a good point about all these to-do lists, right? And when I'm feeling overwhelmed, the safest place for me is to make a to-do list, right? But I cannot compartmentalize. Here's my work list. Here's my home list. Here's my personal list. Like if I need a tube of mascara, that needs to go on the same list as putting together a $30,000 proposal for a client, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because all of those pieces of us and applying for, you know, filling out the school applications or, you know, whatever, all those pieces of us are all inside of us at one time. And I don't think that we have to live separately in each of those roles.
Right. I totally agree with you. And when I teach time management, this is why I say one calendar and one to-do list, because it's one life.
Yeah,
right? One set of 24 hours. So that is such a good point. I want to talk to you about what it means, you know, from your perspective, when we say as women, we are wanting it all. Like, what does that actually mean? And is that possible?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. This is something that really gets my kind of my heart gets to the heartbeat of the whole project is all we hear is, you know, you got to have it all. You can have it all. You have to want to have it all. It's all this, it all, but no one stops to define what it all actually means. And something that I do think, and I'm sensitive to how this sounds, the women who went before us, they had to fight for things like the right to vote, the right to sit in a C-suite office. You know, they had to fight for the right to get on a board, to, you know, even have a voice, right? So we get to stand on their shoulders, because while I still think we are fighting for some of those things, you know, we have significant advantages, but we are also now the first moms to raise kids with social media. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, before social media, you didn't know that you needed to make a sensory bin for your toddler, right? Like before social media, you didn't necessarily know that my kids need to eat the rainbow of colors or whatever. Some of this information is good, but you have to stop and ask, like, who said that? Who is telling you what it all means, right? Because what you have to do is make time to define your all, okay? Because you can have it all if you define your all, because my all looks different than your all, and your all looks different than my all, and not one is not better or worse than the other. But we lose ourselves, we lose our identity, we lose our purpose, we become overwhelmed, insecure. I mean, comparison is the thief of joy. And so now we are just bombarded with all of these opportunities to hear how everyone else is doing it. Potentially, we may decide better than us, in air quotes.
Right.
And the flip side too, is you may look at someone and go, oh, well, I'm doing better than them. And that's not healthy or helpful either, you know? And so I just think that it's a unique challenge. And if women can really, if we as moms can get to the heartbeat of what our all is, you know, then that's where I think that we will get to live wholehearted to the fullest extent. That's where our family is going to, you know, define our family's trajectory. And I just think it's a really important exercise.
It's so interesting, Jenna, thinking about this, because when I think about social media as a mom, not to mention the fact that we're the first generation to have to monitor our kids' social media. We have to monitor our own consumption. And so it's, and I've thought about it a lot when it comes to organization and how we see these Pinterest perfect homes and these, you know, beautiful staged photos. But as a mom, I think the way you just said it had me think of it as, wow, that's so much pressure to not only have to see how other moms mother. And some of it can be good, right? Some of it can be positive where you're like, I never thought of that. That's a great thing. But then we're losing our authenticity in there because we are too busy watching everybody else be a mom. We need to kind of think of this as a strainer, right? Where you're pouring in all this stuff and you're just straining out the things that don't apply to you, because otherwise you could start to act like a mom that isn't even true to who you are, right? And you start to think, well, I shouldn't let my kids do this or that because these other moms are, and maybe it doesn't even matter to you.
Right.
And so all of a sudden you're going in a different lane that is not your own lane. And I really think that we are sent the right children for us as the right mom. So we have to be careful not to change our authenticity because that will affect who our children become.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I actually am just, this idea is new to me, and I've just now started writing about it to my audience last night, actually, for the first time. And it's this idea of being unbothered. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now I am sensitive that we do live in a world right now with things that really should bother us. And we have a lot of work and restoration and resolution that we have got to figure out on a lot of those fronts. I'm not saying you get to just join the ostrich club and put your head in the sand, although I do like to live there from time to time. But there's this idea I'm toying with of this being unbothered, you know, and what can that look like? Mm-hmm. What can it look like when I love the strainer analogy. I think that's such a beautiful visual, you know, but what if I just choose to maybe not have an opinion about that or not get riled up about that because I know what I'm going to allow to bother me. And I think that that's intrinsic around social media. You know, how much time am I going to spend there? Who am I going to follow? You know, here I am listening to someone that I don't even want their life. But now I've seen something that says, oh my gosh, I've got to have those countertops, or my career is not as good because, oh, they're talking about their 8-figure business, or they're talking, you know, whatever it is. So this, I'm just really toying with this idea of being unbothered. Mm-hmm. And what kind of peace and clarity and serenity can I find in freedom in this idea?
Yes, I love that. You know, it's almost like, why are we so bothered? Why are we letting ourselves be that bothered?
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot about, right, like in your 30s, you start to care less. And in your 40s, you care less. And in your 50s, you care even more less. And I'm like, I just kind of want to go ahead and decide that I'm going to care less now. You know, yeah. Like I kind of don't want to wait for all of that. Because also, I think that being unbothered is the key to being present. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've got little kids, 9, 7, and 3, and I really don't want to miss it. Right. Like we hear that a lot, but I am missing it in little moments, right? Mm-hmm. I'm missing it scrolling, and I'm missing it overanalyzing, and I'm missing it caring about shit that I don't care about, you know? Right. And so I do think that this might be my next right thing of becoming unbothered as my ticket to being present with my family.
I think that's beautiful, Jen. I really do. I want to talk about a quote in your book on page 22. It says, women have internally motivated and externally influenced expectations surrounding motherhood. And to be frank, most of it is bullshit. Let me explain. So go ahead and explain that.
Well, I think it just piggybacks on our conversation that we're having, right? And, you know, I don't know how to not talk about COVID yet. It's like, it's something we all want to pretend didn't happen, but we are still feeling the fallout from, right? And, you know, so when we look at the external things, like there's a reason more women left the workforce than men. It's one, because of your point of that, I do believe we are the household managers. And to be frank with you, it's not a role I really want to outsource. We have an in-home nanny who does take a ton of that off of all of our plates, which is super helpful. But, you know, I do like being the one to plan the vacation, and I do like the one to care well for my family and make sure their needs are met. But these external things, we know a lot of families sat down and also said, okay, great. You make less money, so you're going to be the one to quit your job. We know that that was actually one of the most driving factors, was they sat down and said, great, who makes the most money? They've got to keep working, and the other one will quit and stay home. So now we've lost, you know, a huge amount of women in the workforce who have not even returned yet. We'll see how this plays out in a few years. So those are some of the external factors that we see. We know that moms have the least amount of career mobility. They are the least likely to be looked at for a promotion. We talked about lesser pay. We've, you know, there's workplace bias. I'm in Oklahoma right now, and we're having robust conversations about maternity leave for teachers and state employees. And I'm listening to legislators say that, like, these women don't need a paid vacation. Like, what? I don't know about you and how your births went, but 6 weeks is not long enough to recover. Okay. Right. Let alone get back to work. Okay. So those are some of the external things, and that's all bullshit, right? And that's stuff that we've got to work past. But the internal ones too, Jennifer, I don't know if you've experienced this in your work, working with so many wonderful women too, and helping them make room. But when I started Mom Who Works, I started collecting stories. My friend Rachel has taught me that our shared experience lessens isolation. And I decided that started with our shared stories, right? And the amount of women that I asked to share a story with me and said, I don't have one worth telling. I mean, it really gutted me.
Wow.
You know, and it's, and then, I'm sorry, a few months would go by and I'd finally hear back from them, and maybe they were ready to share their story. And I'm here to tell you, it was exquisite, and it was full of resilience and overcoming. And so when I drilled down to some of these internal things that we face, guilt, shame, comparison, I also think that we've got a worth problem. You know, a lot of these women did not believe they had a story worth telling. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Which is so sad. I think, and I 100% agree that it is what you said about the isolation, but I think because I've worked with so many women, I've realized over these years that we're way more similar than we think, and really deep in our core, we're all the same. Mm-hmm. And I think that's amazing. But I wish every woman would know that, you know, that we struggle with the same things. We have the same insecurities. We compare ourselves. We always think we can do better. We care about our children the same. And there's just so many similarities. So that's interesting.
It's our shared human experience, right? Mm-hmm. And it's with huge joy and huge sorrow and every emotion in between, right? And, but I think you're exactly right. When we can share it together, you know, there's so much power in, oh, okay, I'm going through the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you are not alone. You are not crazy. This is, you know, it's just been a really powerful, you know, analysis to kind of look at how I also have felt those same things and also see those replicated. I said this whole project was worth it if it just helped one woman feel less alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I also want to talk about page 38 to 39, where you say the label of mother is deeper than a label we can stick on and remove as we evolve and grow. It's a state of being, a new awareness you literally take everywhere you go. And I thought that was very timely, just my own life. As yesterday, actually, I was thinking about next year as I become an empty nester and my baby goes off to college. You know, I was listening to this podcast that somebody sent me that's going to be an empty nester also. And she was just saying how you're still a mother, and you can now have to decide, you think back who you were before you were a mother, and then all these tools that you learned as a mother. And so I thought that was really interesting because it is an awareness. I think having children has helped me evolve into the person I was supposed to be. And, you know, when they start to go off to college and stuff, you think, okay, what am I doing with my time? I'm not actually physically every day managing these kids. But you need to take all that wisdom with you into the next season. So I think it's something that is just becomes part of you no matter what age you're at.
Yeah. I think the two thoughts, one, becoming a mother was the most clarifying experience of my life. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when my firstborn was here, I didn't realize how much he would show me about myself, right? Like how much I would learn about who I am and what I actually care about. And that has been a process that has been refined with each of my children, right? So now my daughter, my third, I've got two boys and a little girl, she's getting the best version of me for sure, right? Because I've just had all of that time and going through the fire, you know, to really refine and figure that out. Second thing is I talk about this in the book too, is this idea that I think there's a cyclical journey that we're on as moms and also just as women of becoming, remaining, and flourishing. And so I think that we get to do that in a lot. We get to do it multiple times. I actually feel like I'm in a season of becoming once again too. So when you think about it in motherhood, so you start to become a mom, right? And that starts either when you start trying to be pregnant or you become pregnant, or, you know, you're figuring out fertility issues or you're starting an adoption process. However, we all become moms a little bit different, right? So there's this becoming season, and that's when you're really others focused because you're also figuring out this new person, however old they are, in your home, and you're trying to figure out how to get it all done. And so you're kind of becoming this version. And then you start to kind of figure it out. You know, you find some rhythms, you find some routines, and that's where you can kind of remain there. And that's when I think you get to go back inward focused a little bit. You get to start asking some questions of, okay, I can take a breath. I feel like I've got a bit of a grip on this, or at least I'm going to be unbothered enough to know that I don't have it all figured out. And that's okay too. What do I want? What do I want it to look like? Right. And so like, I'm fundamentally deciding to remain here. And then as you really hone in on that and you figure out what you want to be doing, then I think you get to the flourishing, and that's where you become others focused again, but in a way that says, how can I help someone else too? Right. How can I help someone who's a few steps behind me? How can I pour back into my community? You know, and then you get to become again, right? So Jennifer, you're going to get to become an empty nester. And I am not trying to fast forward time by any way, in any way, shape or form, but that's actually a season of life that I dream about a lot in a way that just says, what is that going to feel like? You know, I'm so immersed in the most demanding parts of motherhood right now. You know, I mean, the boys, I can just now like leave them home for 30 minutes or an hour, you know, but I got to take the baby, but you know, I'm getting a glimpse of things getting a little bit easier. But this idea that you get to become again, right? And so you became a newborn mom, then you became a middle school mom, and then you're going to become an empty nester. And also you're becoming maybe an entrepreneur, or you're, you know, remaining in a job and you're like, no, I've decided this is it. I'm diving in. I'm dedicated here. It's just such a beautiful journey, I think, that we get to go on. And I'm really excited every time I get to watch someone around me become again, you know, yeah. And see her journey.
Yeah. It's so good. I'll tell you one thing that you'll think you'll want to do it all again.
Yeah.
I feel like young moms in the middle of it don't understand that, because you're just basically trying to survive every day.
Right.
And you get to this point and you're like, this was the best thing that ever happened to me. And these were the best years, and you would just give anything to go back and hit replay.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's also has a part, there's a part of it, what you just said, your daughter's getting the best version of you. As you evolve as a woman, you become a better mother. And so it's almost like you want to take this person that you know, like, what kind of mom would I be if I had all this knowledge? Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way.
No.
But it is,
I think you get to be that person with your grandbabies, maybe. Yeah. If you get some of those.
That's why people are different grandparents than they were parents.
Good point.
Okay. So I have another thing that I thought was fascinating in your book on page 84. So how we were mothered or weren't mothered can drastically affect the way we mother our own children. So let's talk about that for a minute. That's a huge statement.
Yeah. I've had a really good teacher in this, Dr. Hillary McBride, and she talks a lot about embodiment and just the way that we feel things in our bodies. And this was a topic that we had a retreat around, honestly, with Hillary as our guide, and just kind of talking about an assessment, if you will. Sometimes I think that it can feel a little bit dicey to say, I kind of wish my mom had done something different, you know, or it can feel hard to say, I didn't really have a mother. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I call my mom 2, 3, 4 times a day. Like, that's our relationship. She came and stayed with me when the kids were born and taught me and helped me. And I cannot tell you the grief I feel for women who don't have that, you know, who don't have a guide, you know? So I think that while so many of us are really fortunate to have had an involved and relatively emotionally mature mom, right? Maybe not all of us are unpacking deep layers of trauma, but some of us are. And so I think that how we were or weren't mothered definitely affects our motherhood journey, both from like a couple aspects, right? It's things that you want to do the same, and it's things that you want to do different. And while I have the most amazing mother, there's still some things I'm going to do different than her. And it doesn't really mean that she did it wrong with me, right? It's just that it is my own journey. And I think that, you know, that can be a hard space to move into, you know? And if you also have, you know, a controlling, emotionally controlling mother, or, you know, just kind of a rocky relationship with lots of, you know, unsolicited advice and judgment, you know, then that can really affect your confidence as a mom too. And so I think that you have to, A, know what you want it to look like for you, right? And you can admit that you're, that gets to change and ebb and flow again on that journey. But that it's also okay to say, I'm going to do it different. And that's not a bad thing, you yeah. know? And yeah. I just think that women needed to hear some of that.
Yeah. And not to feel guilty if you don't want to do it exactly the same.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I think it's also difficult if you have, if you're a working mom, but you didn't grow up with a working mom, because you don't have that example. So, but it can also be a good thing, because I think examples or what you know, you just said, some of it you want to take with you and some of it you don't, but you might not have had a working mom that showed you how to do time management, how to have balance, how to manage a home and a career, how to love a career, right?
Right.
Go to work and not feel guilty about it. I mean, there's a lot of things, but the beauty of this is that there's so many coaches and mentors. We are in a world where you can learn anything, and there's always somebody out there if you want to learn a new way of doing things, they're at your fingertips. So I think that's amazing too.
Yeah. And I do, there's a sentiment too, that doing it different is acceptable now. You know, I think that we're more willing to talk about the struggles and say, I want to be a change maker in my family, you know? Yeah. And I think that that starts with the mom, you know?
Right. Yes. So what are some, just some advice you have about self-care rituals that help us feel like we are more in balance? And when I know the word balance is such a controversial topic, and I always look at balance as a pie chart in my life, where this season I'm in charge, you know, I've made these pieces of my pie are my priorities for the season. Mm-hmm. And so I make sure that my calendar reflects that. And it's always changing. Like right now, having a senior, that's one of my top priorities. So I will say no to work things based on, does he have a game? Does he have an activity? Because right. I'm not missing a thing. But that balance also in that pie chart to me is the one piece of the pie is always self-care. It's always health. So what does it look like for you?
Yeah. I like to say that balance is bullshit. And I really love your pie chart example. You know, it is like, you only get this much, right? Yeah. So which pieces are we going to fill this up with? I really like that visual. So one thing that I do want to say is that the phrase self-care kind of irks me sometimes. So when I wrote the book, I talked about self-care, and I did a search around images on Instagram around self-care. And all of them came back, Jennifer, as like working out, eating whole foods, good skincare routine. Women, this is basic necessities, right? This is not extra. And so sometimes, well, I know what we mean by self-care, and it's so important. You've got to go to your doctor. You have got to eat as well as you can. You have got to move your body. But this is not like bonus stuff, right? This is not some like, oh my gosh, you're selfish to want like some alone time to restore your mental health. Like, this is the bare bones of wholehearted, healthy living, you know? And so I want women to feel some freedom from this idea that somehow taking care of themselves is taking them away from something else. I'm coming off of a really, really hard season of burnout. I'd never experienced it like that before. I've been doing the same kind of work for 15 years, and I've never felt this way before. And it was very odd for me to feel like I didn't want to get out of bed and I didn't want to work. And I joked that I was trying an experiment to see how long I could like not work before anyone noticed and started complaining, you know? Mm-hmm. And I had to say, like, it's okay to get some more rest. Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay to say, hey, kids, I love you. I have to go to bed tonight early. You know, my husband does do the evening shift anyway, so it's fine. But I mean, I cannot tell you the way that I didn't feel good about taking care of myself because I felt like I wasn't producing enough for everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was not okay because I was in this space too that was not good. It wasn't good for my health. It wasn't good for my relationships. It wasn't good for my career, none of it. And I had to figure out a way out of it. So for me, that looked like rest. It looked like radical amounts of yoga, finding a way to go every single day, crying on my mat, embarrassingly. And then it looked like I met with a doctor and did lab work, kind of figuring out where my hormones are, figuring out what supplements I might need. And let me tell you, all of this took a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But here I am. The burnout started in August. I would say beginning of April was the first time I've started to really feel like myself in a consistent way. That's a long time of recovery, mm-hmm. you know? And I just want women to know, like, if I'm not taking care of myself, I can't take care of everybody else. Yeah. And that's what I want to be doing. And so you've got to calendar it in and you've got to remove the guilt and decide what makes you feel better. Is it reading a beautiful new book? Is it taking a bath? Is it going for a long run every Saturday? Because that really helps clear your head. And hey, you've always wanted to train for a marathon. You're going to finally do it. You know, I think that some of those goals, I actually like to call them our dreams. And one definition is that it's an ideal intention, which I love that definition of, because I also don't need to not make these goals and add more guilt to my plate. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that when you can set some of those ideal intentions and build it into your regular rhythms and routines every day, that's where you can start to feel that piece of you fulfilled.
I agree. I mean, that's very, very important that self-care is above and beyond what it takes just to stay alive. That's yes. not going to help you ease back out of burnout. I mean, you might have to take a weekend and go with your girlfriends, or you might have to go sign up for a retreat. I mean, those times in my life, even when my kids were little, were so crucial. Yes. And it also is going to help me when they're not around to remember that I can do things like that for myself because I've always done it. Mm-hmm. And I think that I also am so grateful that I taught my kids to do that, that they can stay with dad for a weekend while mom goes and does a conference or a retreat or a girls' weekend. That's okay. And dad's more than capable of taking care of them so that someday when they are put in that position, they know what that looks like. And, yes. you know, even though you miss your kids, don't get confused missing them with feeling guilty because you're doing nothing wrong.
You're exactly right. This is actually the first year in February. I took a week long trip that I got invited on. That was the longest time I'd been away from them without like being with my husband too.
Right.
And guess what? Everybody's alive. Everybody is fine. The kids did miss me a ton. They're like, dad did his best, but we really did miss you. And you know what? I was glad to hear it, you know?
Yeah.
But they all survived. And yeah, I think that your point is exactly right too. My husband feels so much more confident caring for those kids on his own. And it's been a really beautiful thing that whenever you give them the opportunity, because you stop being a control freak over every single thing that's happening around you, some freedom opens up, some time opens up, and those bonds that they're building with their dad are so important.
So important. So important. And you know what, just as a caveat to that is that let these dads do it their way. Sometimes it's not look exactly the same as our way. And so if you go away and they're eating chicken nuggets and they didn't have broccoli with them, that's okay. It's a couple days, a few days of their life. It's not a big deal. I think that I see a lot of moms making dads do it exactly the way they want to do it. And we're a mom and a dad for different reasons.
Yes. 100%. I'm not sure they went to their sports practices that week. I'm not sure they took showers. I don't know. I don't care. I was away.
Yeah. And the best part is to not ask all the questions.
No, nope.
Because then you feel like, oh, if I were here, this would have been different. So the best thing is just like, that was your week. You're in charge. It's none of my business. You know?
Yes, exactly. And guess what? They are fine. Everybody is fine.
They're alive and well. I love it. Well, this has been such a great conversation. You're just a delight. And I want to make sure I say thank you so much for your patience as we had to reschedule a few times with my situations that were happening in my life as a working mom. And I just want to tell everybody that this book right here is something that you need to go out and buy today if you are wanting somebody that understands your life as a working mom and can really pour into you. I think the book does a great job. If people are listening and they are just like, give me more, Jenna, tell us where they can find you.
Yeah, thank you. So you can follow along on Instagram at Mom Who Works. We also have momwhoworks.com, but I'd say Instagram's the space I'm in the most right now. There's a Facebook group too. We are Mom Who Works. And again, coming out of my burnout, we have usual robust discussions going on. But again, trying to figure out what voices I want to let into my life. So Instagram's the place to be. I'm there also, Jenna Worthen. I'd love to see you there. And Jennifer, I just want to say thank you for having me. The work that you're doing to empower moms and women is just inspiring to me. And I think that these are the tips and the tools that we all need to really flourish in our day-to-day lives. And it's a skill set that if we weren't taught, we have to learn. And I think you're standing in that gap for a lot of people. And so I just wanted to encourage you. I know things have been a little bit rough and that's okay, you know, but just thank you. Keep going. We need your work.
Thank you so much. You're so sweet. And thank you to everybody listening today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please leave us a comment or review, and we will be back again next week. Until then, God bless. Hey, friend. Thank you so much for listening today. Guess what? I am now offering my masterclass, Create an Organized and Purposeful Life, for free. All you have to do is go to the show notes below and click the link. In it, I will teach you my 5 core principles for organizing your home and your life, action steps you can start taking today, and time management that actually works. All you have to do is click that link in the show notes, and you will be on your way to getting your home and your life organized so that you can start living with more purpose and less overwhelm.